Hi there and welcome to episode 23 of the OGB Energy Let's Talk Transition podcast. I'm Murray Bell-Hewish, one of the principal consultants at Annett Consulting. If you want to grow your business in the energy transition and need support with strategy and market entry, Annett Consulting can help. Get in touch and let's discuss how. On Let's Talk Transition, we set out to meet the people and companies truly innovating and leading the energy transition. And today we're joined by a leader responsible for his business's journey from oil and gas into the lower carbon sectors. We'll find out why and how they're going about diversifying their business. And this is a journey that I know will be of interest to many of our audience, as they too will have similar plans. So let's find out more. Welcome to the show, Alex Leddy, Commercial Director for Sustainability at Intervention Rentals.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Alice, can you introduce yourself and your company, please?
Yes, I am the Commercial Director of Sustainability for a company called Intervention Rentals. Intervention Rentals have been around for about 18 years now. We started out as a supplier of drilling and well service flow equipment, which would be the flow iron at surface for drilling companies, vessel companies and drilling related operators. And we've diversified into other drilling related oil service provisions, such as pump spreads, metering, monitoring, wellhead services and pressure equipment.
Oh, great. And what can you tell me about the sort of footprint and size of your business?
We have a base in Lunan, south of Montrose. That's where the main operational base is. And we vary from around 40 to 50 personnel. And I'm sitting here in West Hill, where the project and sales office is.
Okay, so both Northeast Scotland bases then?
Yes, but we've just opened a base in Saudi Arabia and we've opened a base in the UAE as part of our expansion plans.
Great. Well, good to see some internationalisation too.
Yeah.
And tell me, you know, how do you see your services fitting in with the energy transition? You know, what do you have to add to the mix?
What we've done, and I didn't really realise it, is that we've been working in the decom, plug and abandonment and gas cavern sectors so far. We've been supplying our customers with our equipment, which is fairly agnostic. It really doesn't care where it goes. But what we've been doing is supporting the renewable sector and the low carbon sector for a couple of years now. And we developed, as a management team, we sat around and we thought about how we could extend our low carbon footprint, because it was a journey that we needed to go on. We realized that we had to move to the next level, not just to move into markets, but to do the right thing for the right reasons. And we came up with the very first thing that we did was come up with an iron management service, which is a way of looking after other people's iron on their behalf that cuts down on road haulage, it cuts down on extra logistics, it reduces carbon in the supply chain, and it allows us to store, manage, recertify, recalibrate, paint, and understand and manage the logistics on their behalf, so there's not pieces of equipment flying backwards and forwards. By collating and controlling that equipment, we managed to remove quite a significant amount of carbon on behalf of our client off the roads.
Great. And how does that fit in with the renewables industry?
So we are working towards a plan at the minute to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, to get verifications on scope 1, 2 and 3 verification, and we're looking to move to an environment full of behaviours and procedures that allows us to be as carbon neutral and negative as possible. And that's for one specific reason. And that reason is that if we want to be taken seriously as a company that wants to function in the renewable sector by introducing green technologies, we need to walk the walk and prove that we're serious about it. So by starting to remove carbon on our customers' behalf, to go through the greenhouse gas emissions protocols and to get accredited that we are as low carbon as possible, we will then have the credibility to introduce green technology, which is what we're about to do. So it is a journey. We have started it and it's going well so far.
Good. So I'm interested then about how you're reducing those, scope 1, 2, and 3 carbon emissions. And I think it's probably worth just reminding everybody what the scopes are.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a daunting task from a standing start from the organization. Every single person here realized that we had to do the right thing for the right reasons. And that was the key word here was sustainability. That what we need to do for the organization is make sure the company is sustainable as an employer for next 20, 30, 40 years, servicing whatever industry is around at the time, because there are mortgages, incomes, families that rely on us developing the offering to the next level. And that next level is to do the right thing for the right reasons. And then sustainability means to us, what markets could we move into? So again, sitting around as a management team, we thought about what, as you've just asked, what is scope one, what is scope two, what is scope three, and why do we have to do it? And a couple of years ago, there was almost a gold rush for companies to be the first ones to be verified, the first ones to get accreditation, NQA or other verification bodies. And I think the good thing is it's moved on to the larger companies that are showing the way forward. You know, you've got your large oil companies, your large Scandinavian companies that are proving that scope three is possible. So what we decided to do was work with Scottish Enterprise, who are an excellent resource for us. And they gave us free calculators, they gave us access to consultants, and they gave us access to processes and ideas to allow us to set boundaries on what our scope one is. What carbon do we produce? So that was an exercise for us to go, well, how many lights do we have on? What heating do we have? Is it kerosene? Is it electric? Where do we derive our energy from? And then set the boundaries in another way, which is using what years as comparison. Of course, COVID kind of got in the way of looking at a linear path of measuring our carbon, but we settled on the most appropriate years to offset, but to analyze and then eventually offset as a plan. So we've done that. We've been measured, we've been analyzed, and we know what our carbon footprint is, and we have a journey to reduce it immediately, but we've also got a journey to move this company to 2030.
Great. And what would your advice be to other SME leaders that are looking to reduce their own carbon footprints or the carbon footprints of their own businesses?
Don't panic. Take it step by step. It's like eating the elephant. You don't eat an elephant in one go. You do it by little bites, right? So it's a case of get help from as many experts as you can. There's free resources out there. Scottish Enterprise, two ladies at Scottish Enterprise, Anne and Ray, were invaluable to us. And then we contracted a third party. We're with Carbon Zero now, and they've been great in helping us to make sure our plan is as robust and realistic as possible, so we're not accused of superficially greenwashing.
Great. And in terms of the support that is available, you've mentioned Scottish Enterprise. Has there been anybody else that, or you know, where else can we get support for SMEs to reduce their carbon footprint?
We decided to go straight for a third party verifier. We went through all of the resources that Scottish Enterprise could give us, and literally the list is almost exhaustive, because there was six different calculators that's free, another six different calculators that are paid for. They allowed us to get access to paid for and free consultants. A certain amount is free, and then we decided on a consultant that was best suited for us, and then we went straight for verification.
Great. So well, that's interesting. And Alex, you also mentioned some involvement in green hydrogen. So tell us about that, Alex.
Yes. So we, through our networks, our managing director is Phil Scott, who was my VP at Halliburton. And through his network, he has access to a company in the States who use thermal harvesting technology to create green electricity. And we're working now with the RGU, Head of Engineering, Head of Computer Science, through the Knowledge Transfer Program to get our technology in partnership with the thermal harvesting in the United States to be hooked up to various technologies, battery technology, electrolyzer technology, grid technology, to prove it in this market, this country, to make sure that we can prove that we go from thermal energy, kinetic energy, to free energy. So it's a very, very exciting process, and I'm really excited to be involved in it.
That's really interesting. And tell me, how does it work between you and, or sort of between Intervention Rentals and Robert Gordons? How did that come about?
So I've known contacts at Robert Gordons for some time, and I know that they are passionate about reaching out to local industry and partnering with local industry through the KTP, the Knowledge Transfer Process and Program. Knowing a couple of people from them before, I reached out to say, listen, I've got this idea, and I want to produce green electricity. And straight away, there was a needle scratch, and it was, come in, we want to talk to you. So once we started the process of what we would do with the technology, how we could do it, and the fact that they've got battery storage, electrolyzer, and grid technology at their side, It was almost a PhD paper written before we'd known it. So it's really, really exciting to be part of that.
Great. And, you know, why is it important for small businesses in oil and gas to transition into other industries, including renewables?
Well, I think everyone knows now that the oil industry can be seen as deeply unpopular in some places. It's also very cyclic, and it's becoming, I would say, a little bit more competitive in certain markets. So I mentioned earlier, we want to do the right thing for the right reasons, which is helping the planet, sustaining the organization, sustaining the planet for a long time. And we realize that non-oil and gas, food and drink, water, aquaculture is one version, and then renewables and energy transition opportunities are another. So we've analyzed whether it's wind and wave or solar or waste energy, waste heat that we want to get into. And we've started the journey on analyzing and proving technologies before we go straight in to try and commercialize something that might not be ready for this region. So very exciting.
Great. And the traditional industry for intervention rentals was oil and gas. And of course, that's an industry that's currently booming. How easy is it to get focus on diversification and the energy transition when your core market is just so busy?
Internally, I can only talk subjectively. The management team decided this years ago. It was the right time to do it. Internally, we have had all the support internally that we would ever need. And the support externally from the trade bodies, the talking shops, you know, the network groups, as well as certain key players, the Halliburtons and the Schlumbergers of the world, has been really, really supportive. So we found no friction. It's been almost a frictionless journey to decide to do it, to get involved to do it, and then get our ideas out there and practically attempt it.
Great. And it's interesting, earlier on you mentioned that your business had expanded into the Middle East. And of course, as we record this, COP28, the climate summit, is taking place in Dubai. Is that the right place for a climate summit?
You're just hitting me with the frost-nixing questions. Is that the right place? First of all, I might not be qualified to answer that question. However, I think that any time they have a COP conference, it's always important. I think the location is secondary. However, because they produce so much hydrocarbon there, I think it's a necessary place to do it, because if they didn't, they would be accused of not involving countries that produce the most hydrocarbon. So I think it's valid, and I think we'll only know how valid it was at the end of the process.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Good answer. And tell me, if you had the stage at COP28 and the opportunity to address the world leaders, what issue would you raise?
What would I raise? The thing that annoys me about the COP process, and it's the only thing that annoys me about the COP process, is accountability. So I would want to see which countries, and some of them are company countries, which countries are being held accountable to the promises or the non-promises that they've made or not made. It looks like some countries are using legalese or a diplomatic process to get out of making any statement or commitment. And I would like to know who that is, and I'd like to know what prevarication that they're making, because it has to be achieved by every... I mean, Scotland's a small country. We can only do so much, but I'd like to know what the bigger countries are doing. I want them to be held accountable. That's just me. That's just subjective.
So you would be pointing the finger and holding them accountable?
I've done that. I've been known to do that, yeah.
Very good. And, you know, Alex, why does the energy transition matter to you?
We have to do the right things for the right reasons. I spent 27 years of my life getting hydrocarbon out of the ground through my career in the oil industry. And we all thought back in the day that it was a really good thing to do. It was cool. You know, it's like everyone needs fuel and, you know, we'll have a job forever. And then something happened and it was literally eyes being opened to, oh, hang on a minute, we can't be doing this forever. So just prior to lockdown, I got involved with green technology, and I swapped whatever small amount of knowledge and experience I had and dedicated it to that. So for the past 6 or 7 years, I've been involved in green technology and the green process. So it really turns me on. It really excites me. And it's something that is, I feel good about doing.
Good. And Alex, what makes a good leader in the energy transition?
Well, to me, energy is a behavior. Leadership's a behavior, whether it's energy or not. Leadership can come from anyone, whether it's picking up the hammer that you've just seen everyone step over, or making sure that somebody's okay. You know, putting an arm on someone, no matter what where you are on the organigram, leadership is a behavior for me. However, to answer the spirit of the question, I think I've got passion for the project. I've got compassion for the people that I work with who want to help me get on with that. And I think it's the right place at the right time for us to do something.
Right. So look after people, be compassionate and be passionate.
I think we should all learn a lesson from that.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And do you know, Alex, in each of our episodes, of course, I'm keen to get across the breadth of careers and the breadth of opportunities that there are at all different entry levels to the energy transition. So I'm keen to understand, you know, exactly what our guests' roles involve, understand them, understand what drives their business, and really get to know the professionals that are behind those businesses. So tell us, and you know, what does a day in Alex's life look like at Intervention Rentals?
Madness, crying, anger, rage, petulance, alcohol.
I don't believe any of that.
No, we've all got lots of hats here because we're all trying to rush to catch up to what the goals that we've set ourselves. And the goals that we've set ourselves are fairly aggressive, but forward-looking and positive. So one day I might be working the commercial process with the commercial managers on how we approach operators or our clients about green technology. It may be resizing or repositioning us internally to get the most out of teams on a commercial sense. From a sustainability point of view, I have to make sure that all our scope 1, 2, and 3 is up to date. I have to make sure that we're messaging that in the right way. I also have to make sure that the technology side is coming through. So I've spent the last 2 days doing business plans and business cases for non-oil and gas renewable technology. And that's quite involved. It's really exciting. It's really interesting. So my background is from a technical point of view, being offshore. I've been a breakout ops engineer. And then I moved into a commercial role, commercial management, then general management, and then regional global management. And I'm using all of these skills and knowledge components to fulfill this role, because 25% of it is deeply technical, 25% of it is about managing people, and 50% of it is trying to figure out what the next step is going to be. Because again, we're just starting this journey and we want to get it right.
Right. And, you know, when you look back at your own career, if you were able to give advice to your younger self, what would it be?
Well, it would probably be calm down. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You can't achieve anything at once. And shut the heck up. Just 2 ears, one mouth, use them in equal proportion. That's what I say to my kids anyway. But I would just say, calm down. It's a marathon. Chill out, relax, sit back. You'll get things achieved, don't worry.
Right. Calm down, listen, and learn, it seems like.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so what's your philosophy of success for the company? How do you define success in the business?
I want to keep everyone safe. I want to keep everyone employed. And I want to keep everyone engaged with the plan. And the plan is to save the planet one carbon atom at a time, I guess.
And, you know, how about yourself? How do you define success for yourself, Alex?
I guess the twee answer would be, I want to be the best father, husband, brother, son, coach that I can be. But that is the truth. That's not necessarily a lie. Success for me is to, I guess, leave a legacy at home, leave a legacy here, and then, you know, try not bump into the furniture and mess things up too much.
Okay, good to know. Alex, in each of our episodes, we ask our guest to set a question for our next guest without knowing who they're going to be. And the last episode we recorded was with the Chief Investment Officer of the Scottish National Investment Bank, who left this question for you. Where are the skills gaps that need addressed most urgently in the energy transition?
Again, I can only answer this subjectively, but I'm not going to say struggle, but we are looking at gaps in our labour force, specifically offshore. We find it a little bit difficult to get the right people or the amount of people that we require for operations and support services and loon. But I know we're finding it difficult to find the right the properly qualified people for offshore. So I think the people that is referred to in the question are still in the oil industry. The oil industry left an awful lot, of people underwhelmed by the industry when the crash happened, and they left the industry and didn't come back. So we've got a finite pool at the minute. And I believe that there's going to be something like 20% people retire in the next 10 years or 12 years or whatever. I was reading an Ernst & Young thing today, actually. But the energy transition and renewable industry needs about 400,000 people. So if we're at about 270 and we're going to lose 20%, we need 400. The people that are required right now are still in the industry, and the rest haven't been qualified yet, to be fair. If we transition old people out and the young people in.
That's right. It's frustrating, isn't it? That these people do exist, albeit the pool has been declining in oil and gas, certainly. But I think for me, one of the most frustrating things is just that lack of transferability of qualifications between oil and gas and offshore wind specifically.
I was talking to some business owners fairly recently, and it centered on the fact that they've been asked to retool and retrain their workforce to move into non-oil and gas renewable technologies, whether it's wind, wave, solar, or whatever. But no one's paying for that. And the rates are smaller if they go to renewables. So there's a reluctance to retrain, retool, reshape, reposition to move into this direction when it's not certain that the market is quite there yet. Mm-hmm. So is it the fact that there's no talent there for the industry, or is it the fact there's no industry there for the talent? Yeah, I would flip the question on the questioner.
Yeah, is there no talent for the industry or no industry for the talent? Interesting. Yeah. And I guess from an energy transition perspective, the positive thing is the contracts and prices, especially in offshore wind, are very, very long term. There's none of the boom and bust that you get with the oil and gas industry, where every 5 years it would seem that the price is on its head again.
I know. It's a case of, it is boom and bust, but when it's good, it's very good, but when it's bad, it's terrible. So it is cyclic, but there seems to be enough to go around, just enough to go around for every supply company where we are, because the rates are so high and the payoff is so high, but we haven't yet found the supply chain in wind, offshore wind specifically, but sooner or later, as we go along, every renewable sector will have its own supply chain. I just don't think we're there yet.
Okay, yeah, so some work to do for the supply chain, and I know that there's some great work being done multiple levels. Actually, we've touched on a few episodes of the podcast in the past, but there's some great work being done to try and address that. But of course, it's a big challenge. It's a big step up for Scotland, UK, Europe, the world. You know, there's a lot to be done.
Yeah,
great. And Alex, ahead of recording today, I asked if you would kindly set a question for our next guest. So have you had time to think about it?
Yeah, and it centres on Aberdeen.
Okay.
So I've got a question for Aberdeen generally, because I know how slowly things get done in Aberdeen, or if not at all. But the Energy Transition Zone in Aberdeen are planning over the next 6 years to introduce a new energy hub in Aberdeen, which is to take over most of Tullis and replace it with campuses for energy. They're going to create 2,500 jobs and 10,000 in the region to make sure Aberdeen is still at the centre of energy leadership. So my question to the next person is, what can Aberdeen specifically, but what can Aberdeen and the leaders like ETZ learn from places like Houston and Stavanger and Perth on what they're doing right? Because Aberdeen really needs this next step. And I'd like to know what we can learn from the other people who are in a similar position.
Right. So effectively then, what can Aberdeen learn from the other major offshore energy hubs about the energy transition?
I know that Texas specifically, are putting in hundreds of thousands of miles of solar panel arrays. They can, because they've got the real estate and they've got the climate. And I know that some of the other regions are putting in sustainable wind and wave technologies. I'd like to know what we need to do to accelerate, just guarantee this region's future for future generations. because I've got no faith it's going to happen.
Well,
I promise
let's
myself
see.
I wouldn't say that, but.
Well, let's hope. You know, I lived in Aberdeen for 27 years, and you know, I think it's a great city. And you know, let's hope that those lessons are learned and are fully implemented. And you know, Alex, I've got to say that from the work that we've been doing in offshore wind and with the developers we've been speaking to on this show, Aberdeen's got a huge amount to offer. So let's see how that comes about. But I certainly look forward to finding out how that question is asked on our next episode. So look, Alex, that brings us to the end of our recording today. And I'd like to thank you, Alex Leddy, Commercial Director for Sustainability at Intervention Rentals, for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's been great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And look, comments on today's podcast, our guests, the discussion we've had, the importance of oil and gas, SMEs diversifying. I'm delighted to hear all of your comments, suggestions, good or bad. Let us have them. And let us have suggestions as to who we should be featuring in future. Feel free to get in touch. A lot of you get in touch through LinkedIn or my email, which is Murray, that's M-O-R-A-Y, at annaconsulting.com. And if you'd like to see or listen to some of the other podcasts, they can all be found online at ogv.energy or Spotify, Apple, YouTube, and most of the other places that you might be able to find a podcast. So thank you very much. Thank you again, Alex, and I hope to see you all again soon.